Hi, this is Mark Cuniberti. You're about to listen to another edition of our award-winning economic show entitled Money Matters. The information given on this show is obtained from a variety of public sources and is deemed accurate at time of airing but is not guaranteed. This show is pre-recorded at an earlier date, so market indices and related stock market references may not be accurate at time of airing, and we will not be taking any listener call-ins. Thanks again for listening. Now enjoy the show. Welcome to the 255th edition of our economic forum entitled Money Matters. My name's Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today in another edition. Today's edition is called Time for a Change. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your livelihood, it's about your money, it's about your lack of money, or your abundance of money, it's about our lives, and just about everything. In short, Money Matters is about you. Before we begin, remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative to Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge. This station, its staff, members, or underwriters. So here we are again, talking about these resistance points and these support levels. So the Dow kind of pushed through new highs, 21,636 is where it sits right now. Down about 4 points, pretty flat. So, just to review, we're at 21,636 on the Dow. There are other indexes, such as the NASDAQ or the S&P 500 and others. But the Dow 30 is the popular one. It's the average of all 30 stocks in it, the big influential ones. And we're at 21,636. Now, that means 21,000 even below us is a support level. 21,000 even below us is a support level. And it would mean 22,000 above us is a resistance level. So technicians think that, you know, this is kind of a resistance level above us at 22,000, so we have to punch through 22,000. And 20,000 below us, 21,000, the even number, is a support level. We have to break through that. Said a long time ago that I thought this market was going to go to 35,000 eventually. But that doesn't mean straight there. And that is an opinion. You know, it could go to 1,000. But I figured the Feds would inflate or die. And when they inflate or die, then markets generally follow. Inflation, that's what they do. So that's what I said once, and we'll see if it'll ever get there in the next 5-10 years. But again, that's an opinion only. Don't base your any investing on that, because you could see 35,000, but then all of a sudden you go to 10 on the way to 35,000, right? You can go down a lot, so they can come in fits and starts. Just think of a ball bouncing down the stairs or bouncing up the stairs. Stock market generally do that. Just look at a graph of any stock you might own or any market you might follow, and they're bumps and bags, you know. So I base my prognostication on the fact that the Feds just print money, and when they print money, it eventually finds its way into the banking system, which is into the stock market. But there could be, you know, multiple corrections along the way, and it could never get to 35,000. It's my opinion, and nobody can tell you which way the market's going to go. Just my opinion, one of many opinions out there. And so S&P and the NASDAQ, they're all floating around a little bit higher. Crude oil's at 46.73. And here we go. And it looks like there's some news out today. Let's see here what they're saying here. let's see. Oh, Sears. Today on Yahoo Finance, Sears announced that its Kenmore products are now going to be available on Amazon.
Yeah, okay.
Including some Kenmore smart appliances equipped with Amazon Alexa, the voice-activated thing. So Sears Holdings popped on that. And eBay's expected to report earnings on Thursday. We'll see what they do. Philip Morris, cigarette maker, missed on both the top and bottom lines in its second quarter, posting earnings of $1.14 a share, blah, 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 blah. And all that out from Yahoo Finance today. So I'm not telling you anything that's an opinion. I'm telling you what's printed out on in front of me here. So we shall see. We shall see. So it is an interesting day. The Dow continues to churn higher, with some analysts being very concerned that this thing is just keeps going. So we'll see. The FANG stocks have recovered from their brief knockdown a couple of weeks ago. FANG stands for Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. Those are what they call the FANG stocks. Somebody put that acronym on there. And so we'll see what happens there. And that's basically in the news today. So, yes, this is the 255th edition. My name's Mark. Thanks for joining me. Our website, moneymanagementradio.com, you can get copies, podcasts of previous shows. No cost. The community radio station's way of saying thank you for listening to this station. And you can check out what's happening on your community station, obviously, on the website that represents the station you might be hearing it on. So, yeah, I have a little allergies today. No big deal. Plowing through that. Thank you very much. And you know what's interesting? I put something out on the web, and it got a lot of comments. I was in my yard. And remember, the name of the show today is Time for a Change. And I was in my yard, and I have an artichoke plant. And I saw the flower on the artichoke plant, and I said, oh, shoot, I missed it. I missed the artichoke. It's too old now. And as I said that, I looked at the artichoke flower, and it was a gorgeous flower. And I thought for a minute, wait a minute now. I thought it was too old and past its prime, but for the artichoke flower, for the artichoke, which is a seed pod, right? For the artichoke flower, this was its prime. This is what it was created for. So my perception was it was past its prime. I had missed it, but for the artichoke, it was coming into its prime. There were bees all over it, 4, 5, 6 bees, and a beautiful flower on top, and I thought, it's very interesting how we view age. For some, we might think that old age is a downhill track. But in this particular view of the artichoke, I thought, wow, it's really just a matter of perception. So perhaps our view of old age is skewed by prejudices. And this little simple moment gave me a new way of it looking at aging. And I put that out on one of the social media sites. And I got a lot of people looked at that and liked it and said it was a real thoughtful little blurb. So it was interesting. So I decided, because of the artichoke, to entitle my show Time for a Change. Now, that would mean time for a change, basically, in investing strategies, or time for a change overall, right? Because not only can we change in investing strategies, we can change all sorts of things. And so I penned a little blurb on that. But I want to talk about first investing strategies, because this is an investing show. You know, a lot of investors will come to me and say, you know, I tried investing and I really want to pay you to do it. And I said, well, what did you try? Well, whatever I tried didn't work, whatever it was. So they continued to try and they continued to do things and it didn't work. And I've put out things that didn't work. Everybody has. We had a bad idea and it didn't pan out. It happens. That's what investing is. I guess some people could call it gambling, but I don't call it gambling. And so when we have a strategy that doesn't work, we try to move on to a strategy that hopefully will be a little bit more profitable, or at least not lose as much. And so if you're dealing with an investing strategy, whether it be an option strategy or just outright buying story stocks or whatever you have, and it's not working, then the time for the change may be considered, because you know, if you don't change, the results are going to be the same no matter what we do, right? So how does one change investing strategies? Well, it could be just as easy as getting an advisor to do it. Or you could get someone else to do it that's not a paid advisor. Or you could just change strategies in your own administration of the portfolio. And there are many, many books out there that you can read on how to invest and what to invest in. Now, I've always said that, you know, some sound investing strategies, at least in some of the classes that I used to teach, and still do on occasion, was, you know, to look at companies that you're familiar with, that you use every day, right? Then I would say, well, look in your garage and look in your pantry and look in your toolbox and, you know, look around your house and see the names you recognize. And some of those names have been around for a very long time. And so, you know, if you look at Heinz Ketchup or Kraft or Sony or something like that, you know, I'm not saying to buy those stocks by any stretch of the means. In fact, one of them I would probably say avoid. But neither there nor here nor there. What I'm saying is that some of these companies that you know by name, when you buy a share of Heinz Ketchup, which you can't anymore, it's no longer Heinz, but let's say you did, you understood what you owned. Somebody who you told you owned stock in Heinz Ketchup, they understood what you owned. You owned a piece of Heinz Ketchup. So when the ketchup sold a lot, you made money, hopefully, because the stock went up. So owning a share of Heinz Ketchup was pretty easy. Or, you know, I ran into an investor once, he owned a boatload of Chevron that he had gotten from his father as Standard Oil, or his grandfather. And he'd held on to that stock for so long that he was getting literally about $30,000 a month in dividends from the stock that he had held forever in a day. And I think his dad had held it, or maybe it worked through. I don't remember the story. But he's making $30,000 a month in dividends, and he just kept holding it. Now, keep in mind that dividends can be cut, changed, decreased, or increased at the will of the company, and that dividends cannot prevent you from losing, nor they could guarantee you from gaining. But he'd held this stock so long that through its ups and downs, it just kept paying, and it raised dividends sometimes, and I'm sure it maybe cut its dividends sometimes, but he had accumulated enough stock, it was paying him $30,000. Now, again, this is not a condition or a recommendation to buy or sell Chevron. This is just an example of what this gentleman had done. Now, I saw the portfolio and I said, man, you got a lot of Chevron stock here. And he asked me, well, should I sell it? And I basically said, well, I don't think I can really tell you what I said. That would be a specific recommendation for him, so I won't tell you. But what I did tell him will surprise you, you know, because there are certain stocks that I could say, ugh, and there are certain stocks that I could say, yeah. And Chevron was definitely one of the two. Doesn't help you much. But, yeah, my answer did surprise him, because he said he was never told that by another advisor. All the other advisors told him to do one thing, and I told him to do the other. And so I saw him a year or two later, and he thanked me. And he eventually came on board. And so he was happy, I guess, with what I told him. So, yeah, I'd start at the pantry, start at the gas pump, start at the, you know, and move on from there. You know, better than that, then we buy things we don't understand, right? I know people that used to understand, let's say, the John Hancock. Well, let's say, we won't use a specific name. Let's say somebody owned a Santa Claus aggressive growth fund. And I would ask somebody, what's in it? And most people would say, I don't know. It's got Santa Claus stuff in it. But you wouldn't really know. But I asked somebody what's, you know, Heinz ketchup stock, and they would say, oh, it's ketchup, see? So, you know, your investing can start at least on the journey as being as simple as understanding what it is you're buying. When you buy a CD or put money in a savings or checking account, most people know what it is they're doing, right? When you buy a hunk of gold, you know what you're doing. Or when you buy stock in Chevron or Standard Oil, which is no longer, you know what you're doing. You know what you're going to be owning. But, you know, you own the Santa Claus Aggressive Growth Fund. A lot of people say, I don't know what I own. And I'm always a big proponent of know where your money is. Know what you own. Now, if you want to turn it over to an advisor and just have him pick it, that's fine. Then know your advisor and know your limitations, know his limitations. And know what sort of, you know, he should know what sort of risk tolerance you want to take and how much you expect to make and all that. You know, I've always said that investors say they want, they always tell me the same thing. Well, I'd like to, I don't want to risk it, but I want to make some money. Well, I guess you could say, well, then put a money in a savings account. You won't risk it and you'll make some money. But they say, well, I want to make a lot more money than the savings account, but I don't want to lose it. Well, but okay. Well, you want the holy grail, right? Remember, we go into the markets for the opportunity to make money, but not the guarantee. And when we go in the markets, we have the possibility of losing money, but not the absolute occurrence of it. So I like to at least look at, you know, our portfolios by saying, you know, when the market, when I perceive the markets are going to go negative, we keep our heads down. We may get out of some positions and we may just keep our heads down and try to limit any losses that may occur. And so we're still in the market, but we're just not in on them very heavily. And then when I perceive the markets are going to go up, then we place more investments, place more trades. So we might stair step up, grab the profits when the markets have run, and then hang low for a while. So, for instance, a portfolio might gain and then stay stable. Or a portfolio may start to lose and then stay stable. But what we aim for is to, you know, have, obviously, more in the black than in the red. Again, we can't guarantee that, but keep our head down during problems and participate during areas of no problem. We discussed this in a previous show that was approved called No Risk and No Risk. And that's the strategy. That's the hope. But again, you know, this is investing in, some people call it, you know, gambling. And I don't like to put the term gambling on there. But people go in the stock market for the possibility of gains with the existence of the possibility of a loss. And with the possibility of loss comes the possibility of not making anything or remaining constant. So, and they usually, when they say gains, they want more gains than what might be paid in a checking account or a savings account, which is pretty nominal. So, investors will always tell me, well, I can tolerate some loss. Well, I see that, I hear that until they get some loss, and then they're like freaking out. So I always ask somebody, well, let's say somebody comes to me with $100,000, and I said, okay, if I came to you and said you lost 50 grand, would you be upset out of 100? And they said, well, of course. I say, good, good, good. Now, if I came to you and you lost 50 cents out of 100 grand, would you be upset? No. Okay. So I know his risk tolerance is between 50 cents and 50 grand. Now it's just up for me to find out where. And usually when people say, well, I could stomach a $10,000 loss, I usually cut that in half and think, okay, the guy's probably going to be able to stomach a $5,000 loss, because people say they can stomach losses until they occur. And then they're like, can't stomach them anymore. So, you know, I know how to read people that come to me pretty well because I've been doing it a while. And so on the time for the change, is it time for a change in advisors? Is it time for a change in your strategy? Is it time for a change to how we view this market? So is it too late to change? When is it too late to change? And when is it time to change? Change is part of the universe, and there are many things we aren't capable of changing. First to mind, when I say, hey, you got to change, they might say, well, I got to change clothes, or maybe I'll change my hairstyle, or maybe I'll change my diet. Next, you could say, like I say to my son, change your attitude. Or some people might say, you know, we got to get better. We got to change our mindset. The list is endless of things we can change, right? Our investment strategies, right? How we view our investment strategies. And the same would the same thing would go for things that we cannot change. There are things we cannot change. Can you think of a few things you can't change? Think of those things right now. Think of a few things in your mind that you can't change. Now think of a few things in your mind that you can change. Doesn't have to be complicated. Just think of a few things in your mind that you can change. The important changes in our lives are sometimes easy, and other changes are difficult. But I think, in my opinion, the hardest part of change is realizing the need when to change. For instance, I'm piloting a plane, I'm on a boat, I'm driving a car, I might change direction or speed. And that might do the trick and might accomplish what I'm trying to do. I got to change speed. I got to get there a little quicker. Might change direction. I'm a little too far north. Those are simple changes, easy to conceptualize. Other changes can save our lives, right? We can change our diet or our exercise. You know, our doctor says, hey, you know, you got to change your diet. Change in financial habits can save us money or maybe even make us more money. Changing jobs or careers or even locations could make us more money and make us happier. Changing our lifestyle might apply if one had chosen the wrong path in life, which resulted in a poor mental health or physical health, or just plain plunked us down in a group of people that were not conducive to what we expected out of life. And like I said, even changing locations or residences, I moved to Hawaii, can result in monumental alterations from current situations. I moved from my allergy-prone Los Angeles to Florida, where my allergies got better. What to change and where to change might be obvious or it might be hidden, right? I'm losing money in an investment. What do I change? Well, I realize I'm losing money. I need to change something, but I may not know what to change. Why we should change is obvious. Well, investments, you could say, well, I'm losing money. That's why. But it's not always obvious. Sometimes people see no reason to change. Think of somebody that saw you thought should change and didn't. And therein lies the most difficult part of altering paths, knowing when it's time to take a different road. For example, suppose an investor loses millions using a trading strategy that repeatedly fails. Or an overeater gets a note from his doctor their blood pressure is too high and the cholesterol is through the roof. In both examples, the need for change is obvious. One guy's losing money, the other guy's dying. But many times the need for a change can be obscured, right? Let's say you have a big ego. You have to change your investing strategy. But somebody has a huge ego and says, no, I'm not going to change it. Because changing for somebody with a big ego might be an admission of guilt or failure. I'm not going to shut down my car dealership, even though it's failing, because I have too big of an ego. I'm not going to back off of this guy and stop, you know, striving to prove my point because I have a too big of an ego. Some changes can involve around addictions. Now, the term addiction is a negative consequence or a continuing habit, a continuing behavior despite a negative consequence. Gambling, I'm losing money, I keep gambling. I'm getting cancer, I keep smoking. You know, overeating, I'm getting heavy. Addictions can be tough, and this is not an addiction show, but we have to cover it because there are people who have investing addictions. They're basically gambling, but they're gambling on a much higher scale. Addiction can mask the reason for change. And addictions can mask the reason for change because when you perform whatever their behavior is or take the drug or what the chemical is, you get these reoccurring euphoric hits when you do this. You pull the handle and you get high and you drink a drink and you get high, or smoke a cigarette and you get lightheaded, or you get your nicotine hit, or whatever the behavioral or chemical addiction would be. Those reoccurring hits can mask the reason you want to change. I don't want to change. I like the hits. You can also become chemically dependent if it's a chemical, and you can become behavioral dependent. I must do this. I must gamble. And there are people that I know that have gambling addictions, and there are people that I know that have smoking addictions and all sorts of addictions. I'm sure you know some too. So these reoccurring euphoric hits may make any change not only undesirable, but because of the nature of withdrawal from an addiction, it can be painful. Mentally, physically, like you see on TV when somebody withdraws from heroin or something, or both. Usually it's both. A lack of willpower might be to blame for refusal to change. I just can't quit. Or perhaps external conditions such as finances, right? I have finances. Well, I can't quit. Maybe a woman says, well, I can't quit, you know, being a lady of the night because I need the money to feed my kid. Maybe finances might prevent somebody from quitting something that's detrimental. Or maybe I mentioned here even incarceration. Maybe you can't quit something because you're incarcerated. They've got you in jail, or they got your handcuffs on you. The list is endless. But the meaningful and willingful positive changes in one life that are controllable, that are doable, that we can do deliberately, can be rewarding if we make a positive change. Positive change can be rewarding. Positive financial changes can result in less debt, right? You get out of debt. Or it could result in more income. Hey, I got another job. I'm making more money. I'm happier. Changes that address addictions can make for, usually people tell me, for a happier and healthier life, right? I quit smoking. I don't drink. I don't do heroin. Crank or whatever they're doing. Or they stop gambling or whatever they were doing, behavioral addiction. It makes them happier. Changing in lifestyle, career, residency, where you live, or peer groups. You know, he's hanging around with a bad crowd. Change in peer groups, any of those can make for better outcomes, right? I wanted to get my son out of the bad crowd he was hanging out at school for a better outcome. Again, the list is without end on the positives of making such change. Realizing that there is a need for change. Realizing that there is a need for change is step one, correct? Because if I don't think there's a need for change, I'm not going to take step two and actually do it. So your step one is, hey, wait a minute, I got to change something. Step one, I got to change something. Regardless of what you think you need, what you think you like, or anything else, regardless of what that is, what you think you like, what you think you're hooked, or what you think you have to have. Taking a step backwards and being honest with yourself. Be honest with yourself. And say, you know, do I really need to change this? And stepping back from it and say, do I need to change this? Do I need to change my investing strategy? Is this not working? Should I really take a hard look at this? Take a step back, which might mean opening up your brokerage statement, right? And actually graphing what you've been doing, you know? I myself, for investing, when I analyze another advisor, my first watch is, did he lose you any money? That's my most important thing. Because if he didn't lose you any money in a down market, in my opinion, he's doing a great job. Now, most people say, well, he didn't make me a lot. I said, but that doesn't matter what he made you. You are in the market. You are at the poker machine. You are at the slot machine. So you had a chance to make a lot of money. So you were gambling. You were investing, however you want to call it. So you did have the opportunity to make money. You may not have, but the key is they didn't lose you any. That is number one. You know, he said, well, he made me 30%, but he lost me 40 the next month. You know, so that's my first question. Did you lose any money? If he said, well, I lost a little bit, or I lost none, but I didn't make much. I'm like, it's probably a pretty good advisor, especially in this environment, or we're in a 1% environment, folks. It's hard. I'll be the first one to tell you, and I'm sure everybody else too, if they're telling you the truth, it's hard. Make 10, 15, 20% in an account. You want to gamble. For your retirement, I think it's probably, you know, a little high hopes to make 15-25%. It can be done, just like anything else could be done, but a little harder in a 1% interest rate environment. The need for change is not always self-realized, right? You know, it's always you who needs to change. Somebody comes up to you and says, hey, dude, you seem to be gambling a lot. Or, man, you smoke a lot. So sometimes others might drop hints. They might make suggestions. They may bring up the issue directly. You know, hey, dude, you know, you got to stop. Some people may hint, boy, that cigarette stinks. Or, you know, you're actually going out with that person a lot. I don't know. So they may drop hints. They may have an open conversation. Or they may do the dreaded or last resort of and very effective intervention. You know, your whole family gets together and they, surprise, we're all here. And what are you all doing here? We got to talk. And they all sit down and they intervene. They say, you got to stop. We're all here to make you stop. I've never been to an intervention, never been party of one in either direction, but I understand they're probably very, very emotional. No matter where you are or think you are, reoccurring negative outcomes and consequences are signs. They're signs that perhaps something needs to change, and at least being open to the conversation with yourself is the beginning of possible change. If friends or family are making comments or even being ignored entirely, let's say, yeah, I'm just hanging out with this one person and I'm not seeing my friends. Or all I'm doing is going to the pachinko palace and we're dropping marbles in these gambling machines. I'm not seeing my family. Or all I'm doing is I'm going off to shop all the time or restaurants and just eat by myself and gorge and I'm not seeing my family. Or whatever it is, if you're not seeing your family and they say, hey, you know, you're not seeing much of us anymore. Where you been? Or they're making comments, you know, like, you're not looking too good. This could be a red flag that something needs to change. And you have to be open to that. Somebody comes in and says, you ain't looking too good. Or whatever it is. Is it ever too late to change? Well, I suppose, you know, we could all think of instances where it's too late to change. Think for a second. Just take a second and think. Think for an example in your head. When is it too late to change? Think of an example where it's too late to change. Did you think of one? Maybe many? That's kind of a hard one. When is it too late to change? Well, something that's permanent. You know, you saw your arm off with a chainsaw. Well, that's too late to change. You can't change that, right? I mean, you used to be able to say, well, tattoo was permanent. I went to the World Fest. I worked the World Fest this weekend, and I got a temporary tattoo. I could take it off. But now I understand, you know, I saw the guy said he had a tattoo, and he lasered it off, and I couldn't tell where it was. Took it right off. Marriages, are they supposed to be permanent? Well, they are supposed to be, but we find out that there are a lot of them are not. Getting incarceration, well, you know, if you get yourself in jail for 10 years, that's going to be permanent, at least for the duration, right? OJ just got out today on probation, by the way, OJ Simpson. So, is it too late for a change? Albeit, for some things, yes. For some things. And some things we thought were impossible to change can be changed. So I would say, arguably, no, it's never too late to change most things. Eventually, a change in direction, albeit late in a cycle, no matter how late, will yield at least something positive. The sooner you make a change, assuming it's a positive change, right? You make a negative change, bad things are going to happen. The sooner you will see positive results from a positive change. Even change late in the game, right, will likely help something. Unfortunately, as I asked you to think about, there are things in life that you cannot undo. It's the way the world works. Some things cannot be undone. You make a decision, and it's a bad one. That may affect the rest of your life, like somebody dropping out of school or somebody deciding what college not to go to or whatever, hanging out with a bunch of crooks. You've decided you're going to do that. But some things you just can't go back and undo them. However, I'm of the belief, no matter whether it's financial, personal, medical, or what have you, the willingness to change, even the willingness to change, will yield some kind of result, even if it's just improving the self-respect or the self-esteem of the person willing to make that change. I'm willing to change. And the fact that you're willing to change and ready to make the change may say, you know, now I have a little bit more self-respect. I'm willing to quit. I'm willing to find a new advisor. I'm willing to try a new strategy. I'm willing not to gamble anymore. Regardless of whether it's early, right on time, or even late in the cycle or late in life, the saying, it's never too late to change, may be a concept we should grasp tightly and never let go. It brings to mind something that I heard from Reinhold Niebuhr, 1892 to 1971. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Reinhold Niebuhr, 1892. He died in 1971. True. We can't change things that can't be changed. We have to accept the things we cannot change. But the courage to change the things we can. I can change my investing strategy. I can change my advisor. I can change my eating habits. And the wisdom to know that you can't change it is like, I'm going to go to that person. I want to make that person change. Well, you can't make another person change. So you have to know the wisdom is like, dude, give it up. You can't change it. That's it. Accept it. Hence the first sentence, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. So we have to delineate the three. Being a financial columnist is being a financial radio show. I will sum this up by saying it is never too late to change investing strategies. As long as you're alive and you have money left, it's never too late. I've seen people have investing strategies that they stuck with until all the money was gone. I've seen it. $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 gone. Spent it all on bad investing strategies. Better late than never certainly applies to revising a financial strategy that isn't working. If you've got a financial strategy that is not working, or you're losing money, especially if the market's going up and you're losing money, if the market's going up and you're not making any money, okay, that may be just because you're in the wrong thing that's not going up or whatever. Usually these things ebb and flow. But if the market's going up and you're losing money, then that would definitely be something to look at. Certainly some positions will lose money in an up market and some positions will make money in a down market. But general rule, it's never, never, never too late to change a financial strategy that isn't working, but you have to be willing to make the call. The longer you wait, at least on a financial strategy that's not working, one, the more money you may lose, and two, the less money you may make were to go to a more successful plan or change the person that's doing it or reading about a new strategy or what have you, changing it yourself. And it goes without saying, the longer you wait to make a positive change in investing, the more money you will likely lose. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back. Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause welcome back to Money Matters, your community forum. Thank you for calling. My name is Mark Cunha-Brady. This is show 255, Time for a Change. Well, we've covered pension plans on this show before, public and private pension plans. Do you have a pension plan yourself? Does your company? Maybe you're part of CalSTRS, or maybe they're your own state sort of run pension. Well, the saga continues. The story has not changed for many huge pension plans and state budgets. Illinois, a state we have covered before, continues to bleed out in its hemorrhaging of cash versus that Illinois. Plain English, Illinois is so underwater, the concept of its surfacing and being able to financially breathe on its own is far from being anywhere near resolved. Years of making promises it can't keep, Illinois finds itself in the dubious position of possibly having its debt downgraded to junk by Moody's, one of the three companies that rate such things. S&P, another large rating company, already made this threat to Illinois, moving it from triple B minus to junk some time ago. And Fitch Ratings, the other third company, has issued similar warnings. They grade that, you know, great to terrible. Junk, obviously, is low on the totem pole. And the problem is when your debt gets graded junk, you want to go out and borrow money, you got to pay more in interest. It's not a good thing. If its debt does get downgraded, if they do downgrade Illinois' debt, it would be the first such state to get the not-so-coveted term of junk. How bad is it? Well, they have, Illinois says, $15 billion in unpaid bills for the last 2 years, and they have an estimated quarter of $1 trillion in money that they promised. Years of overspending by politicians, because they're the one who administer the money, right? Which include, interestingly enough, Barack Obama, who was elected senator of the beleaguered state in 1997. These elected officials have made a mess of all things financial. There is simply no way nicely to put this. An interesting side note on Obama's propensity to overpromise the public purse under his control. Business Insider nails the former president of adding 86% to the United States government during his 88-year term, but during his 8-year term. I would add, obviously, balancing a budget or coming even close eluded Barack as a senator and continued to baffle him during his presidency. We're not putting the entire Illinois mess on Barack, of course. He had many overspending compadres to help him move the state into near bankruptcy where it is today. It's apparently difficult for some elected officials to spend within their means. You wonder if they do this at home. So today, the great state of Illinois wrestles with unpalatable recipes to solve the mess, and many doubt without massive defaults that it can be solved at all. It's that bad. New budget proposals, including the most recent being offered, they offer these proposals forward to see if they can get their spending in line. Region budget proposals offer to slash spending, suggesting you slash spending across many lines, including education and other coveted programs, and obviously many social programs. And, of course, these social spending advocates are putting up the usual resistance. Ralph Mateer, director at the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, said, quote, "It's like taking a meat cleaver to spending rather than a surgeon's scalpel." He's referring to the budget cut proposals is like hack, hack, hack. You guys don't even give it any concern. This analyst, think Illinois will eventually throw out both the scalpel and the chainsaw. Oh, both the scalpel and the meat cleaver in lieu of a chainsaw. The amount they owe is so staggering. Illinois lawmakers decided that the best part of the solution, that first part of the solution, is to borrow more money. They're going to borrow more debt to pay the current debt, which is a seemingly common theme for elected officials finding themselves in the financial red. We owe money, let's borrow more. A recent bill was passed authorizing borrowing $6 billion more to pay some of the $15 billion that is past due. Those doing the advanced math will arrive at the solution that the remaining obligations after, if they do buy $6 billion or borrow $6 billion, will stand at $244 billion. Ouch. If either S&P rating, Fitch rating, or Moody's ratings downgrades Illinois to junk, the interest the state will have to pay on any new debt will likely skyrocket. Not to mention the possibility that such a downgrade and skyrocketing interest rates would cause extreme digestion to the state's other debt instruments that are floating out there, as well as putting in question Illinois' propensity and ability to fund itself going forward, both in the short and long terms. The credit agencies are warning Illinois to take the latest budget proposals. Take the deal. The implied threat being the unthinkable and first of its kind, a downgrade below today's current BBB minus rating to junk. Regardless of what happens, much like Puerto Rico's recent belly-up financial condition, it usually means a whole lot of people are not going to get paid a whole lot of money. My name's Mark. We will be right back.